Welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you in association with Quilter. Inheritance is nearly three times the size of the advised platform market, with close to £1 trillion of intergenerational transfer set to take place between 2017 and 2027, according to King's Court Trust. Quilter is leading the discussion in how advisors can meet intergenerational demand and run family offices. Search Quilter Platform Family Linking to find out more.
Hello, my name is Lois Vallely and I'm Chief Reporter for Money Marketing. Thank you so much for tuning into this podcast in association with Quilter, which is all about intergenerational wealth. Traditionally, wealth has passed from one generation to the next upon death, but as life expectancy increases and society shifts, the generation known as the baby boomers, those born between 1946 and 1964, many of whom are now reaching retirement, are the wealthiest generation in society. But they are finding themselves caught between elderly parents, many of whom need care, and adult children struggling with university debts, increased living costs, and soaring house prices. So how do families ensure wealth is spread across the generations fairly so that it benefits everyone? I'm joined by Tracy Crooks and Heather Owen to discuss what they are doing to support families with intergenerational wealth and to have a discussion about intergenerational wealth strategies more generally. Thank you both so much for being here today. Would you like to start by just introducing yourselves to our listeners and saying a bit about yourselves? Maybe Heather, should we start with you?
Great, thank you. So I'm Heather Owen. I've worked with Quilter for coming up to 5 years now. Started with their graduate scheme, working directly with clients, and now more recently on the research and analysis side of things. And really excited to talk about this topic with you today, especially I think with the changes to the health and social care setup we saw last week, big opportunities arising for advisors and clients to think about their intergenerational wealth planning.
Great, thank you. Tracy, would you like to say a few words about yourself?
Oh, hello, thank you for inviting me to join you here. I'm Tracy Crooks. I am an advisor with Quilter. I've actually been with the group for 29 years, so been in financial services for 29 years, moved across into advice 4 years ago, intergenerational wealth transfer and sort of tax and trust planning is my specialism and the area that I enjoy the most, just helping clients look at how they can help their family in the future.
Great. Thank you both so much for being here today. So I'd like to start then by just having a bit of discussion about why intergenerational wealth management is so important, especially now, both for clients and for advisors themselves.
So I think it's always been something that's been a big topic for advisors with their clients, but it sometimes feels as though the changes we see to policy and obviously the need to raise tax and revenues means that there are so many different ways that clients are able to build up their wealth, but also so many potential areas and pitfalls that they can lose their wealth as well. And so actually advisors being able to help navigate that with their clients is becoming a bigger and bigger and more important part of the daily role, rather than just simply how do we build up the wealth, but how do we actually pass that on in the most tax efficient way and in a way that everyone understands as well. Planning can, depending on the individual person's situation, can be an incredibly complex or an incredibly simple kind of journey to go through. So being able to build a plan and actually build on it year by year, I think, is really important.
Tracy, what's been your experience of sort of helping clients with intergenerational wealth strategies more recently?
I think the pandemic has actually changed some views with clients, just kind of seeing that it's probably the first time some of them have experienced a big drop in the markets and seeing some of their wealth just disappear overnight, where previously they'd perhaps been concerned about gifting or worried about gifting too soon and needing the money themselves. They're now thinking, well, actually, you know, if it can go that easily and I'm still okay, then yes, you know, let's think about sharing out amongst, like I say, the sort of broader family. The difficulty I've experienced really has been encouraging them to have those conversations. When you speak to people, it's a, you know, nobody talks about their finances around the dinner table, and really that's what we should be doing. You know, we should all be more open, but it's always been a taboo subject. People, it's very personal how much wealth you have or haven't got, and you know, people don't really want to talk about it. And that's where we can come in as advisors, when you're sitting down and reviewing client situations, and you're actually setting out exactly what they've got in terms of assets, investments, and often at this point no liabilities at all, and just talking them through so that they can understand what that means. And, you know, writing it and seeing it in black and white, which some of them don't actually do until they sit down and try and develop a financial plan, they don't understand the implications of the wealth that they have.
Making sure you plan ahead rather than just sort of burying your head in the sand almost. And I know it's sort of it's the long known thing, isn't it? Don't bring up money at a dinner party, but actually it's probably not a very helpful thing to say. So clearly building a sort of intergenerational wealth transfer strategy is an important skill for an advisor to learn. So I just wondered what each of you would consider sort of a good strategy. How does an advisor go about building such a strategy for clients?
I think the starting point is to have that conversation with your clients, talking to them about their wealth, and actually bringing in, quite often you'll find that one partner or the other is the key kind of is the person who looks after the money. You know, more often than not, you'll find that they'll sort of say it's a husband and it's, oh, my wife's not interested, or it might be the other way around. And, you know, that's your starting point, is actually get the pair of them in together and talking about money and understanding it all, and making sure that when you're talking to your client, you're explaining to them how you can look after them, but also how you can look after their family in the long run as well. It's not all about me looking after you today. It's actually me being here for your wife or your husband, you know, or your partner, if something should happen to you. And just to kind of, it's building that trust there at that point, that you're there to look after both of them, and then taking that one step further and looking at the broader family. And, you know, trying to encourage them to bring their children in, or their parents in, I guess, depending on what age group you're looking at. And just, you know, yeah, just helping kind of guide them and leading the way. But it's trying to holistically develop a plan and a relationship, a trusted relationship with the family as a whole.
Heather, is that something you'd agree with?
I would absolutely agree with that. I think, as we've both mentioned already, it can be quite a daunting prospect almost to sort of face all of these potential unknowns. You know, what am I, am I going to need care in the future? What is that going to cost? Is that going to leave me with absolutely nothing? I think many advisors would possibly agree in saying that that has, for some clients, been a bit of a sort of grey cloud looming, or it's been such a big grey area and such a big unknown that it can actually put clients off even considering, how do I build a plan? You know, what am I going to have to pass on to my children? Absolutely no idea. So we've seen a starting point last week, definitely, with the cap on how much people are going to be looking to pay for their care, which I think is going to just really help to give clients that feeling of, okay, well, now I can actually think, this is what I potentially need to earmark and put away, or this is what the situation might look like. Okay, now can we actually start to make a plan with everything else that we've got, and look at our arrangements? And I think a good starting point is for an advisor to actually look at the arrangements a client has in place already. And that can also mean that it's less daunting for the individuals and their families as well, rather than sort of looking at, okay, can we make this as kind of complex as possible, or these kind of strategies and arrangements, which actually a lot of people never potentially will have heard of, or the word trusts can be quite scary, quite daunting. So actually looking at a client's pension pot, they might have one pot, they might have several pots, doing a bit of a health check there, first of all, is a really nice, simple way of introducing the concept of intergenerational wealth planning by looking at, does that pension have the abilities to pass on to your children or your family members as you want them to? Are you able to bypass your children and pass this on to your grandchildren potentially? Does the pension allow you to do that? Have you got an expression of wish form which is up to date, which is accurate, which is really going to mean that that money is passed on as you want it to? And pensions, maybe everyone doesn't like thinking about them, but everyone's heard of pensions. Almost everybody's got a pension. That's something that we routinely explore with clients on a day-to-day basis anyway. So I think starting at that point can be a really nice way into the conversation with looking at where you are currently. And then a bit more widely, things like life insurance, making sure that, okay, well, if you have got a house that you're wanting to pass on to family members, if there's a mortgage in place on the house, you know, is that protected, or would you passing away mean that that house automatically has to be sold to pay a mortgage, for example? So just making sure that these day-to-day things that everybody has heard of, first of all, are in place and they fit the needs of that client can be a nice way into the conversation, I think.
Sorry, Tracy, go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was just going to add that I would agree with Heather that the starting point is to keep things simple. You can't go in talking about sort of trusts, intergenerational wealth, using terminology that they don't necessarily understand. What they need to do is understand what's right for them first, what they need first, and then look more broadly as to how much more they can, you know, potentially do, or even if they want to. So I think you can't just assume that they want to leave money to their family. I mean, Daniel Craig was a prime example, and just one of many who've kind of said they don't want their wealth to go to their children because they want them to learn and work hard themselves. They don't want them to have that expectation. But equally, it's making them understand what happens if they don't pass on their wealth, either through their lifetime or through sort of planning through their wills, number of unmarried couples and different legislation and regulations. So it's I think it's just as simple as starting with your client, building that trust with them, sharing the knowledge with them, with their partner, and then more widely, and just kind of earning that trust along the way. But it's important to build that relationship as best you can once you are starting those conversations, then opening up with the family and bringing them in as early as possible so that they can see that you're looking after their family member now whilst they are well, and will do the same then if they become vulnerable in the future. It's just really important, I think, building trust and creating a level of understanding so that clients know what they're going to potentially face. And as Heather says, it's starting with the simple things first, things that you can explain quite easily, and use pension nominations, and actually just making them understand what they can do with their pension as well, because so many still think that they're going to end up with it's what pension can I get from my pot, and it's making them understand that actually you don't have to take that pension. You can leave some of it if you need to, or take it sort of ad hoc so that there is a pot left in the future if needed.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. I did also, Tracy, you did mention COVID earlier, but I did just want to bring that back into the conversation. I think it's quite difficult to have a discussion without sort of discussing COVID, the dreaded COVID, a bit more. What are some of the other ways that you think that's impacted the way wealth is being handed down through generations?
I think one thing we may have seen throughout the pandemic, probably only anecdotal at the moment, but whether we'll start to see numbers and figures as we come out of this situation, is actually families bringing forward potential gifting or inheritance that they were planning to pass on to their children. So for people in retirement age and older who've maybe had savings and investments and pots that they've thought, okay, this will be for my children when I pass away. Actually, those children have potentially been through struggling businesses, furlough, unemployment, a lot of financial challenges for people in the working age. So we may see as we come out of this that actually a lot of that gifting has happened already, which is something that advisors are going to have to be starting to factor into large gifts that have been made outside of the gifting allowance, which is obviously something which is key for planning.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've had clients who in the past year have withdrawn from their own investments to support their children, but equally I've had other clients who have withdrawn from their investments to spend. I think they've seen, you know, actually if they can lose value quite significantly overnight, they can actually afford to spend a bit more. And we, you know, we spend a lot of our time whilst you're still planning for the future, it's actually encouraging them to spend some of their wealth as well, rather than actually lose it in inheritance tax going forward. So I think you're absolutely right. It's opened up people's eyes to how much wealth they have, because I think some, you know, a lot of clients, some have inherited wealth already. So clients have built up their own wealth through successful businesses. So they are more cautious about letting go. Perhaps they didn't have as much money from their parents historically. So they've now built up their wealth and they kind of want to protect that. And it's just trying to encourage them to share their wealth, to kind of give them the reassurance that it's not all, you know, all about gifting it now, but taking sort of baby steps really in using the annual allowances and you know, just doing those small things now. And some adults don't like to think about inheriting wealth. It you know, doesn't necessarily feel right. Others feel that they you know, they do have a right to what their parents have built up for themselves. So you've got to deal with lots of different emotions and lots of different sort of attitudes from people. I find it frustrating, I think, really, when people assume that they have a right to this inheritance from their parents who've built up this wealth. And you know, I do encourage people to spend their wealth, but equally in a, you know, in a guided way, so that they're not going to run out. And yeah, so there's so many factors to take into account as an advisor. It's just really important to sit down and speak to your clients as individuals, and then their broader family. But it's treating each one individually, because all of their circumstances are different. So the underlying theme is potentially the same in terms of wealth and intergenerational wealth transfer. And there's an opportunity now that probably isn't going to be there in a few years, because this wealth has just grown over the years. But I think that's where it's harder for the older generation to let go, because actually they feel like they've worked really hard to build up this pot and they don't want to lose it. They want to sort of protect it. And it's just making them understand the tax implications of not doing anything, and how they can help their broader family without impacting their own lives and lifestyles.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. So my colleague, Amanda Newman-Smith, wrote an interesting feature for Money Marketing recently, as part of this series, actually, with Quilter. And one of the things that I particularly noticed was some Quilter research, which showed that nearly half of baby boomers and Generation X use the same financial advisor as another family member, but millennials are more likely to use someone unconnected to the family. So I just wondered what each of you thought that going forward advisors should be doing to appeal to different generations.
I think One big thing is adapting to millennials where they are, rather than expecting that they are going to be receptive to maybe the older ways of working. I think COVID has definitely brought forward, everyone would say the same, I'd imagine it's definitely brought forward the use of virtual technology. So Teams, Zoom, digital online platforms as well. And these kind of ways of working, this is how millennials operate in their day-to-day lives already. It's how they expect to deal with their finances as well. So I think for advice companies and advisors to be willing to keep these ways of working long term going forward for the clients that prefer that, I think is going to be really key for attracting and retaining those clients. Millennials or any clients really who feel that, you know, that their time is valuable and they don't have time to arrange to be in the house for 2 hours with tea and biscuits, you know, ready for the financial advisor to come along. They possibly want to have a more dip in and out service, someone they can speak to maybe over WhatsApp or email digitally. So really adapting to where they are to make it a really comfortable and user-friendly experience for millennials, I think is a good way of making sure that it's a service that they want to engage with.
Yeah, I think that's completely right. I guess prior to the pandemic, I was very nervous of using the online platforms because it just didn't feel right. You felt like you should go in and see a client and sit with them face to face. It just didn't feel like, I don't know, it didn't feel like I would be doing my job properly if I didn't sit down with them. But actually, you know, last year it just threw us into this whole new way of working, and some people had already embraced it and were using, I guess, Skype, I guess, which I don't know, do people even still use Skype? But now we've got Teams and WhatsApp and Zoom. Everyone now knows how to use them, and even our baby boomers are using Zoom quite confidently now because they, you know, they've had to learn. So I completely agree that as an advisor and as advisors, we have had to and need to adapt to working in the way that suits our clients. And I think a number of my clients have kind of said, yeah, actually, this works really well for me. And it'd be nice to have a face-to-face meeting, but also do some of the virtual meetings in the meantime. But I think for the millennials, we probably need to be more accessible virtually because they are busy and are just used to just being able to pick up the phone or you know, FaceTime maybe more so. But going forward, it's going to be interesting. I think the nice thing as well with working for a bigger organisation is that there is that sort of succession planning, and there's a range of ages of advisors. So it may be that you work with the older generation, the sort of older family, and a younger advisor may be more appropriate, more suited to their younger sort of family members. But actually, if you're still working together, then you've got that kind of business succession plan in that you've got a younger advisor ready to step in when, you know, you're ready to retire. And you've still got that succession plan in the same way for the intergenerational plan of, you know, moving wealth through the generations, family generations.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting, actually, because recently I was talking to an advisor for a feature I was writing, and he said that after the pandemic was sort of after things were starting to lift, he'd gone back to face-to-face meetings. But then quite a few of his clients, although obviously face-to-face meetings are valuable, especially for probably when you're first meeting a client, but he said that quite a few of his sort of regular clients had requested to go back to digital meetings just because they found it easier, especially those who lived far away from him and didn't want to travel or he found it easier not to travel. So it is interesting how the sort of the COVID pandemic has changed things like that. So yeah, thank you both so much for joining me today. It's been a really interesting discussion, I think. And to our listeners, if you'd like to hear more about intergenerational wealth, do check out the other podcasts we've done. We had a bit of a discussion amongst the team, and also my colleague Amanda Newman-Smith interviewed Ian Brown from Quilter. So do check out our website. There are links available for those podcasts. And thank you so much to Heather and Tracy for joining me. It's been a really interesting discussion today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Quilter. Search Quilter Platform Family Linking to find out more.